We'll get this meeting called to order, and just so everyone knows, we're going to do the pensions first. Chair Murphy has to be someplace else a little bit in a little while, so we'll get that one, we'll walk through that one first and get that one out of the way, and it'll leave us more time for the bigger bill. And members, I also want to apologize for yesterday, the fact that we had originally scheduled this meeting for yesterday, but as this time of year, we know things are fluid, and some minor things had come up, and they didn't get the bill done till after late last night. So that's why we had to move until this morning. So it's, I apologize and go from there. Welcome to the committee. If you guys could, and Chair Murphy, and if you could introduce yourself for the tape, and then you can walk through the pension bill.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. We're bringing to you a bill that has been worked on for 3 months following the most significant bill that's from last year that contained what some people thought were all that were necessary for pensions for a long, long time. However, we have to keep at the promises that have been made, and the workers still go on, and the work of the pensions still go on. And the most important thing to remember about pensions is that they are promises made that must be kept. People's lives after their work life are very economically dependent on what we do in the Pension Commission and in state government finance. The public employees of the state are brave, hardworking, and courageous. They come every day, storm, calm, any kind of weather, any kind of circumstance, the public employees are always there doing their job. And we have to recognize that, and we have to honor that. The bill that we are going to present to you is a basic bill. It covers many topics, not as many as some would like, but it's the bill that we're going to present to the Pension Commission today. We are presenting it just as it appears in the summary that you have in your packet. The employees of ours from the LCC, Susan Leschewski and Chad Hewitt Burgett. and Chad, this is his first appearance as the vice chair of, or the vice director of the Pension Commission. And they are going to walk through it and summarize it for you. I do have to tell you that it is still my hope that there will be a change to this bill when I present it to the Pension Commission. Ms. Leschewski.
Thank you, Representative Murphy and Chair Nelson. We have a summary that should have been handed out to all of you, and we will sort of walk through that at a high level. I'll note that everything in the bill was approved by the Pension Commission. There are just a few minor tweaks, minor amendments to a couple of provisions that have not yet been put in front of the Pension Commission, but when we have this bill heard later today, we expect that the bill will be approved. The provisions that have been removed from the bill that had been previously approved by the Pension Commission are three. They relate to funding. They have a financial impact on an employer or would require some additional state money. Those are listed on page one of the summary. The first relates to an increase in employer contributions under the Minnesota IRAP, the Individual Retirement Account Plan, that has was approved but is removed from this bill. In addition, there had been funding in the bill for MRF, a subject we all, I think, have heard much about. That is not in the bill. And finally, state aid to local governments for payer contributions dating back many years ago for an increase in employer contributions that was required to MRF. That state aid to local governments is not included in the bill. I will turn over, if it's all right, turn over the next couple sections to Chad, who had the most to do with those.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, again, my name is Chad Burkett. I'm an analyst for the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement. as Ms. Lincheski said, this will be a pretty high-level overview of the bill. If anybody wants to get in the weeds, I'm happy to do that. Starting with Article 1, and I'm working off of a memo here dated May 22 that I believe is in your packets. Starting with Article 1, this is the changes for the Minnesota State Retirement System. It's just administrative provisions, so they're administrative and technical in nature. The three most substantive of the changes clarify voting rights for unclassified members to elect board of director members for the Minnesota State Retirement System, and then establish a more clear definition for the term filed when members are applying for benefits, and then corrects an error in the 2018 omnibus bill relating to Fairview members. Article 2 deals with three provisions for the Public Employees Retirement Association, or PARA. The first provision is the Military Service Credit Provision, Purchase Provision. This applies to PARA members who have served or take a leave from their public employment to serve in the military, and it expands their right to purchase service credit up to 5 years. A couple things to note is that this does authorize a $250 administrative fee for applying for a calculation of the benefit, which then gets applied to the cost to purchase the benefit if the member chooses to move forward. This language also is something that was changed since the Pension Commission has seen it, and you can find that change on line 13.16 in the bill. And what's been done there is it's replaced the term initial period of enlistment, induction, or call to active duty without any voluntary extension to a more simple term, one or more periods of service. The second provision is the PRO, or phase retirement option. Again, this is for PARA. This just applies for folks who want to retire early but continue to work up to half time in their position. This program was sunsetting on June 30th of this year, and this article changes that so that it's a permanent program, and then makes a handful of administrative changes as well. And then the third provision in the PARA section modifies the Minneapolis payments for PARA PNF relief associations. There was a couple relief associations for police and fire in Minneapolis that were merged with the PNF, with the PARA PNF fund in 2011. And this makes some changes to the way that they are paying their unfunded liability. It creates more stability for Minneapolis so that their payments don't change in the future in exchange for a higher rate of payment now. So that concludes Article 2, and I'll turn it over to Ms. Lincheski.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you again, Chair Nelson. Article 3 relates to the PARA statewide plan. This is a plan for volunteer firefighters that is administered by PARA. There are some changes in the bill to that program, which will allow a municipality to terminate its participation in the plan and make immediate payments to the firefighters. So this is in the case of a township or a city that has closed out its fire department and the former firefighters would like to have access to their benefits. That isn't currently allowed, so this makes that change. It's really aimed at the little township of Breveter so that those firefighters are now able to get their benefits. Article 4 of the bill addresses a bunch of changes for volunteer firefighter relief associations, and these came from the state auditor's working group. These are recommendations of the group, mostly reasonably minor changes. There's nothing terribly substantive. The one item that I think is somewhat substantive is it reduces, there's an allowance now for a relief association to change its bylaws to reduce the vesting. This is the required vesting period, which is currently 20 years if it's phased in over a number of years. It's now the requirement has been reduced to 10 years, which is a good thing, I think, for firefighters who would like access to their benefits when they retire at age 50. A couple other changes are mentioned in the memo, mainly changes that have been requested by firefighters and are now put in the bill. Another change that you may have heard about because it has been appearing in other places is some relief for the city of Austin relating to its Firefighter Relief Association. Austin for years has been splitting its fire state aid between its contributions to para police and fire and to its relief association. Currently under the law, those fire state aid payments are required to go to the relief association if a town or city has one of those, and not to split the aid. Austin has been doing that for many years through an agreement between the firefighters and the city. So this is an amicable settlement of how they want their fire state aid to go, but current law does not allow it, so the bill allows that in the case of the city of Austin. I'm turning this over to Chad again for the Minnesota state changes.
Proceed. So Minnesota State Article 5 applies to the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities Retirement Program or Individual Retirement Account Plan called the IRAP. And the biggest change is an employee contribution increase from 4.5% to 7.5% effective July 1, 2019. It's phased in over 5 years for members that it doesn't that the issue doesn't apply to. The issue that it's addressing is noncompliance with some federal law. So that's why this is in here. The second provision included in this article is an extension of the early separation incentive program that the Minnesota State uses to induce eligible employees to retire as early as age 55. That program is scheduled to expire on June 30th, 2019. The change in here makes that program permanent. And then the third provision are administrative and technical provisions. I'll turn back over to Ms. Lynchinsky.
Ms. Lynchinsky.
Back again. Looking at Article 6 of the bill, these are generally applicable changes. The most significant of those is something that gives the City of St. Paul and the School District of St. Paul some relief from what looks to be a current statutory violation wherein the two entities have been making contributions to a supplemental pension plan, to a number of them, actually, multi-employer plans, that is not currently permitted under state law. So this gives them a year sort of break from that statute or that restriction and allows them time to work out some kind of a settlement, either a legislative change or some other changes that would allow them to comply with state law. Article 7 is one of these recurring things that we deal with in the Pension Commission. It's a special law for one constituent. This constituent wants to transfer from the Minnesota State IRAP to the Teachers Retirement Association. The special law will allow this person to make that election, make some additional employee contributions, and then basically pay for the cost of the additional benefit under TRA. The final article in the bill that I'll just mention is a number of technical changes. It's probably almost half of the bill. These are fixes that are required to language, mostly language that was adopted last session. With a bill as big as the one in 2018, there were a number of minor corrections that needed to be made, and those are in Article 8 of the bill.
Any questions for the testifiers? Acom, Representative Acom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Representative Murphy, you had brought up that the para provisions have been removed from the the bill and wondered if you could maybe help me understand a little bit more. I know I represent a suburban district that does not get LGA, and so I'm just curious if you can help me understand what's going on and just maybe clarify that a little bit for me.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, I can explain a little bit. But it goes back to a basic thing that I've been ranting about for at least 6 years, really ranting, and before that suggesting, is that the line of pensions are not a line item in the governor's budgets, and they should be. They historically, pensions have been included in the budgets of the various agencies and so forth. And so as a result of including it just with the agencies and having the agencies decide how much of their total budget is going to be for pensions and so forth, and instead of a governor stepping out and demanding that pensions be covered in an appropriation on a biannual basis. Pensions are always the last bill to be heard because we don't know how much money is going to be left over. And it's gotten better. When Speaker Thiessen was in office, Speaker Thiessen was the first one to give the Pension Commission and the state government the idea that there was money set aside for pensions. And they had a target. Pensions had a target. And we thought that that was the precedent that would go forth. But it hasn't. And so we're fighting for a target. And this year was like the other years, and we did not. It was not exactly like it, because with the new governor and the short transition period, there wasn't time to get to them on all issues. But we tried. We tried, and we tried to have a target. And when we didn't get the target, continuously on since that, I have been like the little pit bull, not nipping at the heels, and I still am. And we divide the money out to various committees, or the bills with money to various committees, and the tax committee had the MRF funding proposal, and which they accepted, and then the PERA funding proposal, which they accepted up, and I don't know, because the cone of silence still exists, apparently. But somehow or another, there's enough discussion going on that PERA is not in the tax bill. And that's very important. And there was misinformation, because the termination of the sunset on the bill that funds 1,500 levying or 1,500 tax, what are they called?
Local government tax authority,
from one member, one public employee member, to hundreds of public employee members, but they're on the littlest authorities, 1,500 of them in the state, though. And we, since 1997, the state took on the responsibility of helping those little taxing authorities by presenting state aid to them. But it was deadline, or it was sunset at 2020, June 30th, 2020. And so you think, well, we can do it February of next year, right? When we go in back into session in February. But that's not true, because their current amount of money that they are receiving, the little taxing authorities, the tax part, receive their money on July 1st, 2019, and December 31st, 2019. And that December 31st, 2019 payment that is sent by the state to the taxing authority expires June 30th, 2030. And then there is no more money coming in because it was sunsetted. And if we correct that sunset next year, they will be 2 years without funding, because they will have to levy, they will have to announce in September their intention, September 2019 to December 2019 is when they have to announce what their levies are for the following year. And if they want to, they are going to have to levy the difference between what the state used to send them and their tax, property taxpayers will have, taxes will go up. And we can't correct it next year because they have to announce what they're going to levy. But we can correct it today through discussions and the power of the tax committee, to ability to change what they agreed to, if that's what they agreed to. I'm not sure. I don't know. But, and the governor can. But the clink in there is that everybody will intend to continue the levy somehow, or continue the aid somehow. But if we don't continue the aid to the local authority, they're going to have to levy for that aid. And then they have the authority to do that. But that's, and when you look at the whole tax budget and the whole budgets, you know, it's about $13 million. It's solvable, and we are going to continue to try to solve it in the next few hours.
Representative Akam.
Thank you, Chair Murphy, and for giving that historical perspective. And for also continuing to fight for that. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Murphy. I'd rather think of you as a very strong advocate than a pit bull.
Thank you.
But I share your concern, and I think most of members in our caucus believe strongly that an agreement is agreement, a contract is a contract, and those should be honored. And I've said it often, not only in this committee, but in taxes as well, that a promise made is a promise that should be kept. So it's important to do that. As we are sitting here discussing this, and you've alluded to some situations of the power of the executive, which suddenly has become the legislative, in this corrupt system of special session, which basically renders all of us feckless and useless. Here we are sitting in an unofficial meeting, unable to offer amendments or to amend or change anything. This is basically take it or leave it, and that's what we're going to be shoved with when we get to the floor. And members, this whole process we need to address even if it requires a constitutional change. The governor should be calling us into special session right now and making our work legitimate. Everybody who comes down here, it's a waste of time, because three people are sitting here making the whole damn budget deal for the state of Minnesota, and then we're expected to be useless little drones to vote for this stuff. Mr. Chair, I have a question of Mr. Burkett with regard to Article 5, the extension of the early separation incentive program. It talks about it, but it doesn't really allude or is very specific about the extension and the option to induce early retirement payment not to exceed 1 year's salary and a contribution to the employee's health care savings plan account. Are these funds charged from the pension account, or are these charges that are charged from the state general fund?
Mr. Burkett.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hertas, these are charges that come from the operating funds assigned to Minnesota State. They don't come from any pension funds.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Lachinsky, you alluded earlier that later on an agreement is going to be made. Again, I'll circle back to my opening comment. Who's going to be making these agreements? Certainly not the legislature. Nobody's in a position to act or ratify the amendment or the change that you're talking about. Members, this is most frustrating that we're put in this position. And we're going to go into caucuses once we are finally called into special session. We're going to be told there's going to be little or no amendments, if any. Everything that we've done for the whole year is down the drain. We're starting over. It's a special session. I just cannot express how frustrating this is, because we are encouraging, and we've seen it for the last several years, governors who tend to not engage early with the legislative leaders, not agreeing on targets, and then leverage time to the very end, to the push and shove. The budget that we had last year was an effective budget, fund government. And the idea that we swing back and forth and ask for the moon plus 200% in an unrealistic, incredibly dynamic growth in state government in terms of taxes, and just allowing the private sector to catch up a little bit, but we have such unreasonable extremes in terms of budget negotiations. And this, I don't know what we do. The system's got to change. It really does. We have to make sure. And we as a legislature don't have to put up with this. We don't have to agree to anything. The governor calls a session and we end it. And this is just a sham and a mockery. I don't really want to participate in this charade, but I'll be here and I'll listen. But this is not transparency. This is what three people want. And I don't think any of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle like this any better than I do. And with that, I'll end. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Keep it to the...
Yes, this is to the pension bill. First of all, thank you, Representative Murphy, for your determination. I guess pit bull isn't necessarily the first analogy I would have used to describe you, but I appreciate your determination on this para issue. It's important to a lot of our communities. You mostly answered the question in your response to Representative Akam's question, but I guess just for my clarity, when you presented the bill at the outset, you said there was still one change you wanted to see made to this bill. Just so I'm clear, that is hoping to add the para provision in there. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you. I just wanted clarification on that. I really appreciate your work. I agree. It's something that needs to be done, so I appreciate that you're working as hard as you are on it.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Representative Murphy. And this question, I guess, is more a few. I have a couple of questions. First off, about the process itself. And I see at the top of the summary itself regarding it's a summary of the LCPR amendment, but it also says it's a pension bill draft. So my first question is, you and I served on the pension plan, pension commission, for 4+ years. I've never seen a draft of a bill presented to this committee before it was approved in its entirety by the pension commission. So could I ask you why this bill is being presented here before it has been presented to, in its entirety, to the Pension Commission?
Chair Murphy.
Mr. Chair, the Pension Commission posted the announcement of the pension meeting for 9:30. On Monday.
Today. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. When it was posted on Monday?
Oh, yeah.
At my request, because it was very difficult. The communications between the House and the Senate and Ms. Commissioner Rosen was tied up a lot in a lot of things because of her position as finance chair and so forth. And we didn't get together until, or to name a time for the pension commission until Sunday night, just before she was going on the floor for the opioids debate in the Senate. But we did take the time to stop. I said, we've got to have a time to post our meeting. And we posted it. This meeting was posted yesterday, and time-wise, and I think they took the first slot they could get. And so it's practice for the commission. And it's just the way it's turned out. But the commission meeting has been posted as according to the House and the Senate rules.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Ms. Lencheski, you and I have served in our various capacities on the Pension Commission for a number of years, and you said in your opening remarks that the articles, as in the summary, have been described. You said that they've all been approved by the commission, but has the bill draft been approved by the commission in its current form as it would be presented to us?
Ms. Lencheski.
Chair Nelson, Representative Albright, no, it has not. At our last meeting on April 2nd, there was some controversy concerning an amendment to the delete all that had been worked through by the commission. And a decision was made by the chair to adjourn rather than to approve the bill that was that had been compiled for that last meeting.
Ms. Lencheski.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Lencheski, could you describe to me the amendment that was controversial?
Ms. Lencheski.
Chair Nelson, Representative Albright, it was an amendment that included the three so-called funding items that are set forth on page one under provisions removed in the summary. It's the ones I mentioned. As you are aware, due to your time on the Pension Commission, the funding for MRF always seems to be controversial. And so that was probably the focus of the discussion, was really whether the funding that the state provides to PARA with respect to the Minneapolis Employees Retirement Fund would be increased or not. And that had been in the bill, and the amendment was to remove it from the bill.
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, so in your statements you mentioned once again that the MRF provisions are now being carried in the tax bill?
Correct.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Lanceschi, in previous iterations of the pension bill, we worked a long time on the augmentation with regard to the Fairview settlement. And you mentioned that there, in your summary, that there are some technical changes, and I'm looking at what I think is the changes, but I don't see any changes in the variables. So could you describe for me what has changed?
Ms. Lanceschi.
Chair Nelson, Representative Albright. So the change in the 2018 bill was to slowly reduce augmentation to that group of former employees down to zero so that it would match what everybody else is currently getting for augmentation. In the drafting of that change to the statute, some language had been omitted, which would have meant that some augmentation rates that were in effect for a short period of time, about 10 years ago, would not take effect, would no longer be credited to these employees, and that was not intended. It was intended that this slow reduction would occur, you know, starting today or starting actually last July of 2018, and then continue from there. But the deletion of those provisions was an error, so we were putting those back in.
Thank you.
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, you alluded to, and Representative Freiberg clarified, that there will be a change noted in the meeting of the Pension Commission at 9:30 this morning to possibly add the PARA provisions back into the pension bill. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair.
Chair Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, that is my hope.
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, so once that commission meets and a final vote on the pension bill is taken, would it be your intention then that this bill will be brought back to this committee, or will it be taken to the floor, or what is the process for this bill traveling going forward?
Chair Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, I don't know exactly, because I want this bill to be a special session bill on the agenda of the special session. And I would assume that, but I don't know, that the committees will have a say in the order of process at special session. It may be that I just don't know, because I'm not, I haven't been.
Chair Murphy, I don't think anyone quite
paying
knows.
Attention to the what the rules of the special session are going to be, or what the practice of special session is. And I didn't ask. I've been spending my time on the urgency of informing anybody that'll listen of the importance of this to the 1,500 taxing authorities across the state of Minnesota.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, my line of questioning is not intended to in any way impugn your desire to put a pension bill forward. You and I both share the same premise for the Pension Commission, that it is a promise made and it should be a promise kept. And so my heartfelt reassurance to you that I share your frustration with the process that you are having to undergo in order to meet your stated goal. This is, as Representative Hertas illuminated, I think, quite well, this is barely a courtesy on behalf of three people who are deciding all matters for state governance on behalf of another 190-some duly elected participants to this legislative process. I find it unprofessional at best that the tribunal, as it's come to be known, doesn't even respect the process that the Pension Commission has followed for years with regard to doing their work, fully vetting it, completing their task, taking it to a vote, and then presenting it to this committee. I find it highly unprofessional that we're not following that process. And I know that a number of the pension members share that concerns, as I've spoken with them personally. Representative Hertas, you and I, why are we even here? We don't even need to be here. This is going to happen with or without this meeting, isn't it? It's not a question, it's a rhetorical. I have nothing further.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Murphy.
We are here because it's the right thing to be. It's the right place to be. We are here because we care. We are here because we make a difference. And we are going to. Mr. Chair, the institution has a committee process, and the committee process doesn't disappear with special sessions. Whether the committee is all the committees or the Ways and Means Committee or the committee of the whole, 134 people will be making the decision in our house and 67 in the other house. And the people of Minnesota, all the people of Minnesota, are counting on our best decisions placed before them in the very best way we can. And some of us have higher authority than others, but we can't give up our responsibility to take the authority that we have and use it to the best way to serve all the people of Minnesota. And that's what we're doing here today. And we're listening to each other. And that's the way we have to go forth in the next weeks. And I'm speaking of that as one of the senior members of the institution that's gone through more than 17 special sessions. Back in the mid-80s, there were five special sessions in one interim. And they were one-day special sessions. But whatever were handled, and Representative Hertas had a clue in there, we can do it if we work together, united for the people of Minnesota. And I ask for your support on this when it gets to the floor. This bill affects all of us in many ways, and many of us don't pay attention to pension bills, because the Pension Commission will. And the strongest part of the Pension Commission is knowing that the state government finance is behind us. And I thank you so much for being here and listening today, because it's been said, you don't have to be. But we made a promise as individuals when we asked for our jobs. And this is part of the promise. And we have a new committee of reform that I think I heard Representative Plowski write on NPR at 7:30 this morning, say we're going to look at it. It's like the Regents, you know? It's here now. And then we set it aside and we go on with our committee work. But you've heard this now. It's a good proposal. People are depending on it. It will take us into the next session.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. And with that, move on to the next bill. Thank you. I know you've got places you got to get to, and you got your meeting.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Representative.
And members, as we're coming down for the next bill, I'm also frustrated by the process that's gone on. But I'm also frustrated that the conference committees that we had, that our compatriots in the Senate chose to drag those all out till, and not come to decisions at the end of the conference committee. And Representative Quam, would you please stop that? Representative Quam,
thank you for recognizing them.
Representative Quam, I have
my hand.
I have the floor, Representative Quam. We're going to have an orderly committee here. And I know we're all frustrated having to be here, but we also can call committee meetings during the interim, which is what we're doing here. And we're doing an informational hearing on the pension bill that's going to be presented at 9:30 in the Pension Commission. And we're going to be hearing what the proposal was for the state government finance bill that's going to be brought forward in the special session. And we have work to do here. And we can sit here and we can prophesize and we can scream and argue at each other, but members, we are here to get a job done. We all ran for these positions, and if we don't want to be here, we can always resign our positions and not run for re-election. So members, the next bill up here is the special session on the state government finance bill. And if I get the staff, Mr. Gehring, we'll walk through the bill. Mr. Keegan, you can do it from here, or do you want to do it from up there? Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, I think I'll probably defer to Ms. Roberts to start with the spreadsheet, and then we'll walk through the policy language right after that.
Thank you, Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair, members, you have in your packet the change item spreadsheet for the revisor document 19-5222. And what I'll be looking at is the columns in the middle of the spreadsheet that are have the heading special session, and just to note, there is a fiscal year 19 column and then the for the upcoming budget, the 2021 fiscal year columns, and then the last columns are the tails for this proposal. So beginning with the legislature, you'll see the first item is the funding increase for the Senate, and for the fiscal year 2021, that's an increase of $6.3 million. In addition, there's a one-time change and increase to their fiscal year 19 appropriation of $5 million, so their total increase would be $11.3 million. The next item is the increase for the House. This is the $11.5 million that this committee heard presented to it in the regular session. The next item is $4.8 million. These are the operating increases for the Legislative Coordinating Commission, which includes the legislative auditor, the revisor, the library, and all of the various commissions, including the Pension Commission. And then you'll see on line 12, I believe it is, that this includes an increase for the Legislative Budget Office of $751,000. So the total general fund increase for the legislature is $23.4 million. And then this proposal also eliminates the small amount of funding that comes out of the Health Care Access Fund that goes through the LCC to and then transferred to the House and Senate. The next item is for the state auditor. There's a $784,000 increase for the operating adjustment that was requested. Moving down to the attorney general, $1.945 million for maintaining and stabilizing experienced attorney staff. That's from the general fund. You'll also see a line from the special revenue fund of $165,000 for this same proposal. For the Secretary of State, the first item is in fiscal year 19, the $1.3 million to pay litigation fees related to a case that that office had to defend. There's also $905,000 for the operating adjustment, $163,000 in one-time funding from the general fund. That's the HAVA match, and this proposal also includes the full funding from the federal HAVA funds. And then you'll see $250,000 for an increase to the Safe at Home program, and then $2 million in one-time funding for election equipment grants. So the total for the Secretary of State is $3.3 million. Moving on to the Campaign Finance Board, and I should note, primarily most of the changes from here on are the operating increases requested by the various agencies, but I'll point out where there are other changes too. So for the Campaign Finance Board, $150,000 for their operating adjustment. For administrative hearings, this is from the Workers' Compensation Fund, the $18,000 for salary parity for the Assistant Chief Judge and Judge Supervisors. Under minute services, there is $5,000 each year for securing the state or the cybersecurity initiative, and that will go into the base for minute. Moving down to the Department of Administration, the first item is a $500,000 increase beginning in fiscal year 21 for the in lieu of rent, and that is pays for the maintenance of this building and the Capitol and some other areas around the complex. $132,000 for the requested operating adjustment. $1.6 million one-time funding for the 2020 census mobilization and outreach. A reduction of $374,000 for the transfer of the Office of School Trust Lands, and the is a transfer to DNR, and the Environment Committee is tracking a corresponding increase. And then finally, $400,000 to NPR for their emergency and Amber Alert system upgrades. And so that's a total of $2.3 million for Department of Administration. Moving on to Minnesota Management and Budget, the first item is $250,000 in one-time funding related to their enterprise systems request. There is $929,000 for their operating adjustment, and then $457,000 for the enhanced results analysis for decision-making request. And finally, included is $140,000 in one-time funding to reimburse Becker and Wright counties for the legal fees related to the state auditor case. So that's a total of $1.8 million for Minnesota Management and Budget. Moving on to the Department of Revenue, their funding is for the related to their operating adjustment request, and that is $10.5 million. For the Amateur Sports Commission, $35,000 one time for their operating adjustment. For each of the councils, there is funding related to their request for operating adjustments. You'll note that in some cases, I'll start with the Minnesota African Heritage Council, it's $249,000. That's less than what was in the governor's budget. For Latino Affairs and Asian Pacific Council, the request is at the governor's recommendation. And then for the Indian Affairs Council, there's $527,000, which is about half of what was requested by the council and the governor. Moving on to the Minnesota Historical Society, $850,000 for an operating adjustment for the society. For the Minnesota Arts Board, there's $700,000 in one-time funding related to their move to new space. For the occupational licensing boards, accountancy board, architectural and engineering board, cosmetology, those are all receiving their operating adjustments. there, as we were discussing earlier, the item for MRF relate and para is being discussed in the tax bill. On line 166 for military affairs, $2.5 million for their two requested initiatives related to the enlistment incentives and then the reintegration programs. And then the final agency is Veterans Affairs. There are two operating adjustments. The first is the 544 for the program services and then 775 for the state cemeteries. $500,000 is included for an increase to the Minnesota Service Corps program, and then there's a reduction of just over $1 million for the veterans' homes that is related to a medical services provider realignment of those services. So that is a net increase of $759,000 for the Department of Veterans Affairs. And so moving down onto line 185, you can see the total changes for fiscal year 2021 is $60.3 million in the fiscal year 2021 biennium, and then there's that should actually be a higher number, but there's also the $1.2 million or $1.3 million in 19 plus the $5 million for the Senate. And so on the last page of the spreadsheet, you can see some of the revenue changes that had been discussed, the $3,000, revenue loss related to the hair braiders exemption, and then $210,000 from the changes to the CPA licensing provisions that was Representative Hewitt's bill. And finally, in fiscal year 19, you see we're tracking two cancellations, $220,000 from the information technology account, and then $350,000 from a Veterans Journey Home grant that has not been expended. So the total spending in fiscal year 2021, you'll see on line 226, that's the $1.15 billion, and then the $5.7 million is the fiscal year 19 amount that is also being counted in this bill. That's it.
Mr. Gehring, if you want to walk us through the...
Mr. Chair, could I just have...
Representative Albright.
Thank you. Could I have Ms. Roberts just back up? And on line 176, it just caught my ear when you mentioned about a realignment of medical services provider, and that's a reduction. Is that... showing up in another budget, or what is the I just don't remember what that was about with regard to a realignment. Did we hear that in this committee, or was that through HHS, or did that come through the Veterans Committee?
Representative Eklund, I believe that came through the Veterans Committee. I believe that's through the realignment. They got a savings, and that we're booking that savings. Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that it was a savings that they're able to find through adjusting services.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Eklund, you mentioned savings found, and I don't serve on your committee, and but I'm very keen to veteran services from my district. So could you just humor me or just tolerate a question in terms of what that means?
Representative Eklund, it's my understanding it's not cutting any services, it's just by how they provide them or whatever they found a cost savings, which is... Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Albright, originally we didn't include that whole part. We wanted to make sure that they still had some of that money left over in the savings that they found. But then when we talked to MDBA a little bit more, this is just something that they figured they could save through just operating adjustments.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Eklund, so... is the level of services provided to veterans diminished by these savings, or in a roundabout way, could they use those savings to augment or enhance the services to our veterans?
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Albright, we are assured that the veterans' care would not be diminished.
Thank you, Representative Eklund.
Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, yes, so I'm going to walk through the policy changes in this bill. Ms. Roberts has already walked through the appropriations, so I'm going to start on page 20. I'm going to walk through the bill itself, although you in your packet should have a both a detailed section-by-section bill summary and then also a table summary to follow along as you wish. So starting on page 20 of the bill draft, this is Article 2, State Government Operations. Section 1 is language that requires the Commissioner of Management and Budget to submit data to the Legislative Coordinating Commission regarding costs associated with collective bargaining agreements and compensation plans. Section 2 on page 21 is a new Legislative Commission on Housing Affordability, and you can see the duties of that commission starting on line 21.23. On page 22, sections 3 and 4 is, are both sections that relate to evaluation topics selected by the legislative auditor. This is language that the committee heard during the regular session. On page 23, section 5 is new language that requires the Secretary of State to maintain an email listserv to notify people of new executive orders issued by the governor's office. Section 6 is language that establishes Hmong Special Guerrilla Unions Remembrance Day on May 14th of each year. Section 7 on page 23 is language that provides that data submitted to the Arts Board is public when it's reviewed by the board at a public meeting. On page 24, section 8 is language that adjusts salaries of the administrative law judges. Section 9 is language related to the barter arrangements related to state-owned optical fiber. This language includes amendments that were discussed by this committee during the regular session. Section 10 on page 24 is language that requires MMB to post managerial classified positions for at least 21 days and ensure a fair and open process in filling that position. Starting on page 25, sections 11, 12, and 13 is language that this committee heard from Representative Hornstein. This is language that affects the ability of people with disabilities to be hired for state employment. There's changes to the process and standards for allowing someone to demonstrate their qualifications through on-the-job experience, and then also language that expands the data that must be included in an agency's reasonable accommodation plan, and then also changes to the way that non-affirmative action hires are tracked and reported by the commissioner. Skipping ahead to page 28, section 14, and then also on page 30, section 15, both relate to the practice of hair braiding. This is the language that exempts hair braiders from registration requirements and other oversight by the Board of Cosmetology. Page 30, section 16, is language that increases the maximum award that that may be granted for the Mighty Ducks grant program. This bill does not include funding to provide those grants, but if funding is available, this would increase the amount that a group could be awarded. On page 32, it runs through section 27. This is section 17 to 27. This is the language that provides a general law that authorizes counties to choose to fill certain county offices by appointment rather than by election, and there's the process to revert those offices back to elected positions. This is the language that Representative Nelson has spoke about in the past that replaces the special laws that have been enacted over the years for individual counties of the state. Skipping ahead to page 37, section 23 is conforming language related to the Legislative Commission on Housing Affordability. Section 24 establishes a new task force to discuss state employment and retention of employees with disabilities. On page 39, section 25 is the language of Representative Longs that establishes a grant program and priority items for the Census 2020 mobilization grants that are funded in Article 1. On page 40, section 26, this language ratifies the Minnesota Law Enforcement Association labor contract that runs through June 30th of 2019, and also ratifies the salary administration plan of the Minnesota State Board of Investment. And at the end of Article 2 are two repealers, one related to hair braiding and the other related to the legislative auditor changes I referenced earlier. In the middle of page 41, Article 3, I won't walk through section by section. This is the language that provides a number of terminology changes, primarily changing the word warrant to payment in various sections that are administered by MMB related to payments made by the state. I'll just highlight one section. Section 12 on page 44 is language that establishes the process for reporting uncollectible debts to the legislature. This is an amendment that was adopted in this committee during the regular session. And that article runs several pages to page 61.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just it caught me because we were talking about the word, but on page 44 on line 4, is there a difference there between the word warrant and payment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, so this is, in that case, the word warrant is intended to be used there. This is something we checked with MMB when the standalone bill was being considered in this committee, okay. And they decided to keep that word in that place. Yeah.
Thank you.
So moving ahead to page 61, Article 4, this is language that amends the presidential nomination primary process. This is a series of 8 sections that relate to that process. The key things to note here is that this limits access to the presidential nomination primary to only those parties that participate in a national convention and select delegates to that convention, and also that this language restricts access to the party choice of voters. Not one thing that's different than the language that was heard in this committee previously is that the list of voters' party choices must be provided to the party that the voter chose, but also to other major political parties that participate in the primary. On page 65, Article 5 is the information technology article. Section 1 establishes requirements that the legislature comply with accessibility standards in its IT services. This change is effective October 1st of 2024. Sections 2 and 3 relate to the use of cloud computing options and evaluating IT projects by minute. This is Representative Nash's language that was considered in committee during the regular session. Section 4 on page 67 requires the minutes chief information officer to provide technical support to the legislature in meeting accessibility standards in its IT services. And section 5 on page 68 requires a working group of legislative employees to develop a plan and report on ways to implement the accessibility standards that are required in this article. This working group wouldn't begin until 2021. On page 69 is Article 6. This is the Veterans and Military Affairs Policy, and I'll defer to Mr. Diebel to walk through those changes.
Mr. Diebel.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 6 contains 8 provisions, the first of which is the POW and MIA Recognition Day. This is a Senate-only position. Section 2 is the Veterans Suicide Awareness Day. This is a joint position, but the committee accepted the Senate position without the delayed effective House effective date. Section 3 is a Senate-only provision calling for creation of the American Allies Day. Moving to page 70, it's an agency bill, Section 4. This was carried in both the House and the Senate and gives authority to the commissioner to administer the statutes to implement their authority. Section 5 on page 71 and Section 6 are two House-only provisions that relate to data sharing to allow for veterans who are eligible for the property tax benefit to do so more seamlessly by sharing of data between government entities. Section 7 on page 72 is identical House and Senate language, modifying the language on Medal of Honor Memorial and how the funds are used. Section 8 is a Senate-only provision calling for an account, creation of an account to support the USS Minnesota St. Paul gift fund, which would allow for certain activities related to the commissioning of the USS Minneapolis St. Paul. And that concludes the overview of Article 6.
Thank you, Mr. Diebel.
And then, Mr. Chair, the remaining articles, Articles 7, 8, and 9, all relate to various boards within the jurisdiction of this commission. I'm not going to, or the division, I'm not going to walk through section by section, but just to highlight, language article 7 is the article related to the Gambling Control Board. This is their administrative bill that affects primarily bingo games and bingo game gift certificates and when money must be deposited in a bank account upon receipt. On page 75, Article 8 is the Racing Commission's administrative bill. This article includes both the administrative bill brought by the commission as well as the language that was presented in this committee that provides ongoing appropriations to the commission in the event of a state shutdown. The one section that was in the House bill that is not included in this article is the statutory appropriation from the card playing account. But otherwise, the ongoing appropriation language in the event of a shutdown is included in this article. And then finally, Mr. Chair, I'm starting on page 87 is the article that relates to the State Board of Accountancy. This is also their administrative bill that provides a number of technical and conforming changes related to the practice of public accounting, including the establishment of a retired status designation that can be recognized by the board. And, Mr. Chair, that is the end of the proposed bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any questions, Representative Kwan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I thought I had been recognized to be on the list before. The on this bill and the previous one, I know some things are possibly there that we didn't hear during our normal committee schedule, and it's nice to have those things pointed out. So most of the things were somewhat familiar, even though the words may have been changed for a preference. It didn't appear on the pensions bill, if anything that was in the current one, it appeared as if everything had been heard by the Pensions Commission, but I wasn't positive because with Senate and House being both on it, and that was the clarification that I had hoped to get before the chair left. But on here, when people testify, if we can have them state anything new that maybe came from whole cloth, and then maybe anything that was in the Senate but not us, Mr. Gehring touched on a Senate point, but that's the main thing informational wise that I am interested in.
Representative Quam, this bill, the revisor bill 19-5222, is the product of the conference committee report and the negotiations between the Senate and the House and the conference committee, and language that was agreed to during that conference committee. And it's like some of the language is Senate language, some of the language is House language. I don't believe there's much. I'm going to say much because there might be one or two things. But there isn't much language in here that was not heard either by the House or the Senate that was put into this bill. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this may be a question for Ms. Roberts. I see a cancellation from the Minute Odyssey Fund. Does that revert back to the general fund then? My understanding was that couldn't be used for anything, so are we correcting or rectifying the disposition of that leftover fund?
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair and Representative Albright, that's correct. This 220 is the amount that after beginning with a review by the legislative auditor and then further review by Minnesota management and budget staff was determined to be the amount that was not needed anymore for certain projects. And so it was available for cancellation.
Thank you.
Representative Albright, also, if you remember, if you look on the spreadsheet, the differences between the House and the Senate, when we passed the bill off our floor here, we had that in there, but we were directing Minute to use that money for cybersecurity. And again, that at the time we were told it was $330,000, and in the further review, they found out there was only $220,000 that was left there. If you look at the Senate number, originally they were going to $7.93, I think, million dollars. They were canceling out of it, and that was the money that's in the Odyssey Fund for all the ongoing projects that are currently ongoing. And if that money had been transferred from there all those projects that are ongoing would cease because that's the funding that has been approved in prior years. Mm-hmm. It gets put in that fund and then it's bled out as this. I mean, that's not the right term, but it's taken out of that fund.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Thank you. Ms. Roberts, could you just point me to the line on the spreadsheet where that is identified?
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, it's at the back of the spreadsheet, line.
Select page,
okay. Line 202.
Okay. Oh, right above the fold. Okay. Thank you.
And I think, Representative Albright, I think I misspoke. I thought this had the offers at their original bills, and maybe it does. I don't see it here. Representative Hertas.
I have a question if we're done.
Representative Hertas. We have testifiers that.
Oh, let's finish that first.
Okay. I've got a list of testifiers here. And find my thing, and I apologize to the people that wanted to testify on the previous bill, but Senator Murphy, or Representative Murphy, excuse me, I didn't want to demote her, needed to be elsewhere. Representative Blaha, or excuse me, Auditor Blaha. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Nelson and members of the committee. My name is Julie Blaha, and I'm your state auditor. I just want to very briefly thank you for a couple of your provisions in the bill. First off, I want to thank you for the operating adjustment. And to Representative Quam's point, that was heard here extensively, and also it was included in the House bill. I appreciate that it does help us from going backward and that it still preserves enough flexibility that I can figure stuff out. As you know, it's not everything we asked for, but it's, again, enough to keep us from going backward, and it's also flexible enough that I can figure a few things out. So I really want to thank you for that. I'd also like to highlight the reimbursement to Wright and Becker counties. That was, again, also heard here, included in the Senate bill. And $141,000 doesn't always seem like a big deal in the context of the entire state budget. But to a small county, it makes a big difference. And also, I think the statement it makes is also something that makes a big difference. And it's a great help for our office to be able to turn the page and go forward. So I truly appreciated the bipartisan work that got that into this agreement. And so with that, again, I wish you all the best in the fund you get to have for the next few days. Thank you.
The next I have Commissioner of Administration, Ms. Roberts Davis. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Alice Roberts Davis. I'm the Commissioner for the Department of Administration, and I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning. More importantly, I'd like to thank you for the support of a budget agreement that provides the oversight and funding for agencies to deliver the best possible services to Minnesotans. The Department of Administration, along with MINIT and MMB, provide the core central services of state government, functions that provide other agencies the ability to perform their core missions. Much of admin's work is the behind-the-scenes business functions that provide the backbone for public agencies, such as procurement, leasing, facilities management, risk mitigation, administrative services to boards and small commissions, just to name a few. If we did not provide these services, they would either go undone, or individual state agencies would have to perform them less efficiently, at a greater cost to taxpayers, and with less expertise. In short, the policy and funding requests that our agency put forward streamline and improve services to our partners and help Minnesotans receive the services they need. I appreciate the time that each of you took in hearing and in individual meetings to hear about our work, to hear our suggestions for funding and policy, and to engage with us on what we believe agencies need and Minnesotans expect. Your engagement and cooperation with Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan in their cabinet has created a compromise budget agreement that will first protect the state's investment in the Capitol through in lieu of rent so that we can ensure that it does not fall again into disrepair. Second, it ensures a robust outreach initiative for the 2020 census that best positions Minnesotans to maximize our federal dollars and maintain our representation. And third, it provides a small operating adjustment to allow our department to meet separation costs without sacrificing any of our essential services. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your hard work in crafting an agreement that keeps Minnesotans' employees working to deliver the best possible services for Minnesotans.
Thank you. Next we have, I believe it's the Assistant Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget, Eric Hallstrom. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Eric Hallstrom, Deputy Commissioner at Minnesota Management and Budget, and I am appreciative of the opportunity to be here today to speak in favor of the legislation before you. You know, I'd like to thank and express deep thanks to Chair Nelson and Chair Kiffmeyer, who have worked hard and long over the past weeks with some diligence and commitment to the important work of state government and to our state employees. So I just want to say thank you. A lot of our employees have worked long hours along with your employees over the last few weeks to get us where we're at today, and it's important to acknowledge that work. This bill, as Commissioner Roberts Davis said, provides important investments in operating budgets for the executive branch agencies, for our boards and commissions, constitutional officers, and includes significant investment in our state ethnic councils. It makes important new commitments to state employee and retention efforts for employees with disabilities. Although the executive branch increases are overall modest, these operating adjustments are critical to ensuring that our states continue to provide the same, our agencies provide the same level of service as in prior years, while keeping up with the costs of employee compensation, lease, technology costs, and the like. This agreement provides substantial new resources for cybersecurity, which our colleagues at Minute will certainly discuss, but that will make all agencies more safe, and we are appreciative of those investments as well. And although it doesn't fund all of the critical investments needed at Minnesota Management and Budget, it provides one-time funding for a study of our enterprise technology system, something I've spoken to the committee about, and that will help us develop a sustainable long-term funding plan as recommended by the legislative auditor. It also provides funding to expand capacity for our results team to support evidence-based policymaking to improve outcomes for Minnesotans. And again, we're thankful for those investments. I just want to mention two other important provisions in the bill. First, the bill ratifies our labor contract with the Minnesota Law Enforcement Association and the salary plan for the State Board of Investment employees. And so we're very thankful that that is included. And additionally, Article 3 makes much-needed payment modernization amendments to bring our statutes in line with current technology and financial practices. So again, we'd like to thank members of the conference committee and your staff for the hard work that's gone into this over the past weeks to arrive at an agreement that may not be what either body or the executive branch came in wanting, but will, I think, meet the needs of state agencies and employees well. So thank you very much, and I appreciate your work.
Thank you. Next person I have is Assistant Commissioner of Revenue, Ms. Haugen. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Chair Nelson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Alyssa Haugen, Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Revenue. I wish to thank Chair Nelson and the members of the committee in developing this proposal. Thank you so much for your support. We appreciate your efforts in supporting the Department of Revenue's funding needs and our operating requests that was heard here at the committee. This will help us protect the service levels expected by the 2.9 million individuals, 87 counties, over 800 property tax assessors, and more than 400,000 businesses that we serve. With the funding contained in this proposal, we can continue to respond timely to our customer inquiries, process timely refunds and payments, provide taxpayer education, conduct audit and enforcement activities that ensure a fair tax system, and invest in strong and efficient technology and security systems that protect the most sensitive data of Minnesotans. This budget will help our stakeholders meet their obligations under the law and maintain trust in the tax system. Chair Nelson and members, sincere thanks to the committee for your support and hard work on this proposal. Thank you again for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you. Next I have Commissioner Tomes for a minute. Again, welcome to the committee, and state your name for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to address you this morning. For the record, my name is Turk Tomes, and I'm the Commissioner of Minnesota IT Services and the State Chief Information Officer. First of all, I want to start by thanking Chairman Nelson, Chair Kiffmeyer, and the conferees and the members of this committee for recognizing the need for cybersecurity investment as prioritized in the budget agreement. And I would especially like to thank the governor and legislative leadership, the lieutenant governor, for prioritizing this investment at the global level. This critical investment in cybersecurity will close many foundational gaps and help Minnesota move closer to industry best practice. It will allow us to protect users from more types of attacks, including some of the more sophisticated ones. The highly visible disruption of essential government services in cities like Atlanta and Baltimore highlight the expanding threat we face on a daily basis in Minnesota. While this investment will help to reduce risk, we must also stay vigilant and continue to evolve our cybersecurity practices going forward. With over 2,800 applications supporting state government and 350 active projects at any given time, security must be a priority for all of us, an ever-present lens through which we view our work. Security can't be a bolt-on afterwards, but must be a part of how we deliver services. I also want to thank the members for the good faith debate that surrounded the IT policy language in this bill. These discussions were substantive and collaborative. While we may not always agree on the specifics, this healthy debate underscores how much we all care. People, relationships, and healthy discussions are prerequisites for effective technology organizations. Together, we will cultivate a passion about leveraging innovative technology as a catalyst for change that supports efficient state government and improves outcomes. I look forward to continuing the conversation with all of you and the Blue Ribbon Council on Information Technology as we work together to shape the future of IT delivery for the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
And Representative Quam, you have a question for this testifier? Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the query is in the spreadsheet. There are dollars set aside for security. In the bill language, there are sections about cloud and other IT components. And with that, generally in the agreements with cloud and vendor components, you already have instantiated in their security, whether it's Microsoft has their group, etc. Are the dollars on the spreadsheet including the subcomponents, or is it just for additional outside of any thing that's implemented inside of other agreements?
Mr. Tomes.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the question. The investment in cybersecurity really encompasses all of that. While security is often a core component of the cloud-based solutions that we enter into agreements with, our ability to audit those solutions to make sure that they're secure from a state perspective as it relates to integrating with our environment as it relates to our data requires us to really take a holistic view as we apply security measures to the environment that we support.
And Representative Quam is
very short.
Just one thing, Representative Quam. I think the short answer to what he said is yes, it's above and beyond what they would, other things they've done. It's above.
That was a clarification I was looking at. It's above and beyond.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions of this testifier? If not, thank you for your. Next, I have Tommy Johnson, who's asked to testify. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Tommy Johnson. I'm the legislative officer for the Veterans of Foreign Wars, and I first off would like to thank all of the committee members for all of the hard work that you did this session. We, too, share in some of the frustrations. Then we need to remember and take a deep breath, and despite the flaws, This is the best system in the world, and thank you for your participation in it. The true cost of war includes care of the veterans for the next 40 to 60 to 80 years. I'd like to thank this committee for fully funding the Department of Veteran Affairs and also the military, because we are deploying 900 more citizen soldiers this year, 900 more. We are continuing to create new veterans and subject the veterans we have to more trauma. One of the biggest disappointments is this body passed House File 998, the Veterans Restorative Justice Act. Unfortunately, your counterparts in the Senate did not see the wisdom of saving $1,307,000, according to the fiscal note. I would ask that you please pass that bill next year and help our veterans so some little girl can say, my mommy is a hero, instead of, my mommy is a convict. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir. Next, I have Mary Hartnett on the list. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape.
My name is Mary Hartnett. I'm with the Commission of Deaf, Deafblind, and Hard of Hearing Minnesotans. And I want to thank the committee members, thank the chair, and all of the staff for their work on helping to get this bill together, particularly for people with disabilities. It's a big step forward. I want to thank you for including the IT Accessibility Standards Workgroup that will make digital content available to legislators with disabilities, staff with disabilities, and citizens with disabilities, and also the Retention and Recruitment Workgroup for state employees with disabilities. It will level the playing field, and we're really thankful. I know it was a hard one, and really appreciate everybody's support and work on this. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody else in the audience that needs to or wishes to speak on this bill? If not, Representative Hertaus, you wanted a final question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and if I could indulge the committee for about 90 seconds, I'd like to read something. Would give a little bit of context to my frustration. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In recent days, the news media has characterized a special session called by a governor as somewhat ordinary. It's a fair claim and noteworthy that we've had 29 special sessions during the past 40 years. In the 40 years prior to that, we had only 14 special sessions. And between our statehood and 1975, we had only 7 special sessions. Article 4, Section 12 of our state constitution states that a special session is of the legislature may be called by the governor on extraordinary occasions. Merriam-Webster defines extraordinary as one going beyond what is usual or regular or customary, B, exceptional to a very marked extent, C, of a financial transaction not reoccurring. It would appear that extraordinary and not reoccurring are the operative words in the circumstances by which we now call special sessions. Past custom and usage demonstrates that special sessions were called primarily to deal with emergencies or situations beyond the control of this legislature. The year 1862 is cited for dealing with war. In 1930s, it was relief caused by the Great Depression, 1944 with suffrage for our military during World War II, and notable during the last 40 years and the 29 special sessions that we've dealt with, it was floods 6 times, budget and finances 18 times, notably including education issues, twice about Iron Age unemployment benefits, and once to finance a baseball stadium, and another at the request of the Dayton Hudson Corporation, an apparent move to use government to protect it from a hostile private shareholder takeover. Whether you're a Democrat or Republican, it's clear that the executive branch of state government is increasingly more willing to use its executive power in a manner which should be suspect. The governor's office has often been called the bully pulpit. Threatening government shutdowns by making demands from the executive is acting in a manner which appears increasingly to be a strategy to legislate from the executive branch, which is a separation of power reserved to this legislature. That article was written in June 19th by myself in 2015, and it was widely distributed across the southern part of the state. Members, this is just the frustrating part of what has been going on with special sessions, as it tends to be more and more and increasingly a lever where the executive branch is in cahoots with the legislature in terms of passing legislation and is really extending its arm. I believe that the legislative duties are for both of us chambers to put bills on the desk and give him the option to either sign it or not sign it. We heard recently that the speaker in this session said she doesn't want to present bills to the governor that he won't sign. Really? Is that our prerogative? I guess it is. It could be. But we ought to put all of the ideas that come out of the legislature to the governor and let him decide and let the public make a decision about his decision to either approve or veto legislation. With that, members, and Mr. Chair, thank you for indulging me on that, and I wanted to give some context to my earlier frustration. We've got to reverse this trend. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Representative Hertaus, that's going to take cooperation between the House and the Senate, and members that in the past few years, and in my time in the legislature here, there's only been two times we got out on time and passed our budget. And it's a frustration that, but it's also that it's some of our own doing that we delay things. And as we witnessed on the last night of session, try to run out the clock so that we can pass a bill that was agreed upon so that we don't get our work done. And the Senate has, like I said, in the conference committee, the one that I was on and what I heard from the other chairs on the other conference committees, the Senate was doing a great job of not meeting, refusing to show up, not calling meetings, and then when we were in meetings, dragging things out so we couldn't get done in time, so we forced us into a special session. This is cooperation that would have to take place in both the House and the Senate, and all the members from both the House and the Senate, to try and work together as opposed to trying to one-up each other and trying to force us in the special session, and then spend the next 2 years blaming the other party for why the special session went on, and going from there. So, I mean, this is something we have to change the culture of this legislature, ourselves, and it's upon us to do that.
You will, thank you, Mr. Chair, and you will certainly appreciate this. Again, being in the trades, we oftentimes say if it weren't for the last minute, nothing would get done. And oftentimes that is what happens with deadlines, but unfortunately, some states have full-time legislatures. I'm not advocating for that because I think it would never get done, and so we do need deadlines. But thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Hertaus, in my when I was an apprentice and working with the journeyman I was working with, he had a saying that was gold: just because you've got a day's work to do doesn't mean you got to take all day to do it. If you get today's work done, you can start on tomorrow's. Now, I always have tried to work on that philosophy. We don't seem to do that in the legislature. Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you and the conferees for pushing hard for the census funding. Even though we didn't get the House position, given that the Senate started at $0, and given that this was a very tight budget environment, I know how hard you and the committee members fought for that, and just wanted to extend my gratitude. And I know that there are dozens of complete count committees around the state that are now going to get some support for doing the hard work that we need to do to make sure we have a strong census count, which will matter a lot for our federal budget dollars that are coming into the state as a whole and for our representation in Congress. So thank you very much.
Members, anything else? Representative Claiborne.
Mr. Chair, I would like to thank you for the work that you've done on this committee and keeping us moving and making sure that we were able to do our work early. I would like to express my disappointment that House File 1605 is not in this bill. A lot of work was done on that, and I also would like to say that I want to make sure as we go forward, and I know it wasn't a House position that's not in the bill, but that I would like to be able to keep the elections process and the redistricting process in the hands of the voters so that the individuals who live in our state are choosing their electeds, and their electeds are not choosing their voters. Thank you.
Representative Dean.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not really sure where to begin. I share some frustration that some of my colleagues over there share. And Unfortunately, this is not unusual to what we see at the end of a budget year. No matter who's been in charge, no matter who's been in the majority, it always seems that structurally we have something going on. And in the end, you know, negotiations take willing participants. And what we've seen this year from the other body, I think, is unconscionable. We have a process of conference committees. We had time to do our work, but we saw that many of the Senate chairs did not even have hearings on the days in which they held the gavel. So we in the House have been working hard. We worked hard all year. You know, I sat in some committees and heard from time to time that our Senate counterparts will say, well, we didn't hear that bill. Well, that's not because there wasn't a bill. It's because they chose not to hear it. And, you know, I mean, I'm like as frustrated with anyone else. I had the good fortune of chairing the Elections Committee. And although it's been painted as a hyper-partisan bill, there were many provisions that weren't partisan at all. Many provisions that had been carried by Republicans in the past, many provisions that had authors from both sides of the aisle in the House, and not one bill related to elections was heard in the Senate. And not even the Secretary of State's technical bill was heard in the Senate. So that leads me to ask the question, what is our role here? If we have a bicameral system and one of the bodies chooses not to do the work of the people and really stand in the way of having the debate, because ultimately this is about the debate. If we think that just being obstructive by not acting is a wise move, I would have voters question why they elect us to come here. If we are not doing that debate, our time here is not well spent. You know, I'm really disappointed that HAVA or the Help American Vote Act security money was held as hostage for several provisions in this bill. This was money that was funded by the federal government to protect our elections, and we're only one of 50 states that did not have this money come through to be used. And yet this was a critical part to get done so that our Secretary of State could protect our elections. We recently found out that two counties in Florida weren't just trolled or looked at. They were actually infiltrated, their elections. We don't know to what extent yet. And to think that we would withhold money from our Secretary of State to protect our elections, it's just unfathomable to me that we would do that. You know, I heard statements that, well, the Senate didn't take up any elections bill because we had this hyper-partisan bill. I want to set the record straight. In January, I met with Senator Kiffmeyer, Chair Kiffmeyer, and she said that I don't think anything needs to be done with elections. We've done it all. So to then turn that around and blame the House bill as a reason that the Senate chose not to act, I think is just, it's irresponsible. This is a bill that maintains the status quo and does some things that I think are not good for the state of Minnesota. I think there's money in here that is probably not being put to the best use. To make sure that we're doing our jobs. And at the same time, we had the opportunity to do what I would say was important work for the people of Minnesota, and we've been derelict in those duties. And I said this yesterday in public safety, and I'm going to say it again today, that this is sort of like the last episode of Game of Thrones, in that it's really disappointing. I think expectations should have been higher, and for us to settle on this, I think that that we all really need to think long and hard about what we're doing here and how we're going to change that. Because you can have a really terrible, terrible structure and a terrible, terrible system, but if you have good people, they can still find ways to get the work done. So I call upon all of us to be those good people and to get the work done that the people of Minnesota sent us to do here. And I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for your work on the conference committee. The conferees, how do I say this? The conferees on our side worked really hard to try to find a way. The administration worked really hard to try to find a way. And I think that in the end what we get is the example of what happens when people decide there's no additional role for government. So, again, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for allowing me to speak.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a lot of the discussion has been around policy comments, I'm saying. And frankly, this is a budget bill. The previous is a budget bill. And a special session is aimed at budget bills and getting them through. And I wonder if some of the difficulty is when we try to instantiate policy into the budget bills for, you know, whatever reasons, that helps to make things not work, helps to make bills being instead of dozens of pages, hundreds of pages, or longer. And the we good, they bad, you know, makes for sound bites, but doesn't make good for process. So, you know, the Senate, the House, both have to work together, as the chair touched upon. But part of the process is if we have clean budget bills, I think it's easier to work with numbers. That might be the science side of me. Numbers are cleaner and, you know, easier to understand. And I'm hoping as we go forward, maybe we can keep that in mind, and budget be budget, policy be policy. And I'm sure we'll have a lot of them this coming year. Thank you.
And with that, members, I want to thank our staff here, Mr. Dybul, for the work he did on the veterans and for the late nights we spent, Mr. Gehring and Ms. Roberts. They put in a lot of hard, long hours, longer than any of us ever put in. When we go home, they're still working to wrap things up. And in the last couple of days, they've done some extraordinary hard work, and I want to thank all of them for their hard work. And with that, members, we're adjourned.